Well, scientists say that they once accounted for up to 40% of the entire bird population in North America, with flocks so numerous that when they flew by, they literally darkened the sky, blotting out the sun as they flew by. In fact, eyewitnesses from the 19th century state that they would fly in flocks 1 mile wide but 300 miles long, and it would take them several hours to fly by. So if we had been here in Kentucky 150 years ago, we probably would have been treated to seeing these flocks of birds fly by. And it must have made an awesome spectacle. But alas, the birds that I am referring to, the passenger pigeon, had a couple of things working against it. First of all, it wasn't long before their meat became regarded as a cheap way to feed slaves during the 1800s. And because of the sheer number of flocks that they flew in and the number of them in the flocks, that made them a very easy target. And so unfortunately, during the 1800s, mass hunting campaigns took place, and many of these birds were ruthlessly slaughtered. And not just for their meat, but unfortunately, many times for the sheer fun of it. And in fact, in a single hunting expedition, it wasn't unusual for 100,000 of these birds to be bagged and to be killed. And so it's little wonder then that by the beginning of the 20th century, the passenger pigeon had virtually disappeared from the wild. And sadly, in 1914 at the Cincinnati Zoo, a lone passenger pigeon by the name of Martha died alone in her cage. She was the very last passenger pigeon on the face of the earth. And so with her death, a species of bird that once numbered in the billions totally ceased to exist. And the passenger pigeon is just one of the many sad stories of man's misrule of the creation for the past 6,000 years. Truly, as it says in Romans, the whole creation has been groaning. But yet, when we look at scriptures that picture the time that we are celebrating here today, at the Feast of Tabernacles, looking ahead to the world tomorrow, we see a vastly different picture. We see the creation symbolically singing and shouting for joy. But for this mass transformation to take place, it's not going to just happen. As Mr. Armstrong reminded us many times, there is a cause for every effect. And something is going to have to cause the creation to become and remain the paradise that it's going to be in the world tomorrow. And that has to do with actually what Mr. Bowles mentioned at the beginning of the feast. It's going to have to have God's way of life being applied. And God's way of life has to be applied to all areas, and that includes the creation. And that's what I would like to touch on this morning. And if you like titles, I titled this God's Way of Life and the Creation. And I'd like to do this primarily by going to one scripture, to Genesis 2, verse 15. So if you'd like to turn to Genesis 2, 15. We'll go back to the beginning. And in Genesis 2, 15, it states that the eternal God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. And I think we could apply this, that this is how God would wanted man to care for the entire earth. Now, we all know what the word dress means. You ladies and come here in beautiful dresses, and we dress up and for services. And as I think it was Mr. Pippi mentioned, we have the beautiful plants here adorning us by the podium. And so to dress means to adorn or to beautify. And God wanted us to have a part in beautifying the creation. In fact, many of you might remember that many times Mr. Armstrong would liken the creation to the earth to a cake, but the cake still needed to have, he was going to allow us to have a part in putting the icing on the cake and have a part in beautifying the earth. But unfortunately, it seems like man instead has done everything he could do to destroy the cake instead of guarding and protecting and caring for the earth. And that actually brings us to the second statement here in Genesis 2:15, where it says not only that God wanted us to dress, but to keep the Garden of Eden and, by extrapolation, the earth. Because the Hebrew word for keep means to protect something that is very valuable that has been entrusted to your care. Because you see, we do not own the earth. As we know, it says in Exodus 19 and other places, it belongs to God. But he has given, entrusted this earth to our care. And certainly, what more precious jewel to us physical beings is this earth, that we get everything that we have from it. And we've heard about the miracle of a baby and the miracle of how it forms just over the last 9 months. But just also consider the miracle of where the earth is in the solar system. If we had been too close to the earth, we would all bake to death. And if we were too far away, we would all freeze to death. And it certainly was not just by blind chance that this earth is where it is in the solar system and that it sustains life. So it truly is a miracle. But it is certainly something that we should want to guard and protect. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying what some environmentalists say, that it's wrong to kill any animals whatsoever or to use the resources of the earth. No, God did give man dominion over the earth, and God did give the animals that are clean for meat. But it's applying God's way of life in the environment, that when you take something from the earth, you always have to give something back. And what is the best way to protect the environment? Well, just as God has given us laws, spiritual laws, to guard our well-being between us and God, our relationship with God and one another, and physical health laws to guard our health, well, God has also given us, I believe, environmental health laws to guard and protect the environment. And just to touch on one that we're all familiar with is the land Sabbath. We know what it says in Leviticus 25 about how we could sow the land for 6 years, but then let the land lie fallow. Well, this is one of the ways of giving back to the earth, letting it rest, letting it rejuvenate, and then it can be a blessing for us. And you can apply God's way of life to other areas in the creation. For example, we can cut down the trees and use the forest, but there should always be some kind of reforesting program where other trees are replanted and the forests are allowed to keep growing and they don't get decimated and we end up with deserts like we do today in many areas. Or you don't just kill off a species of animal without giving it an opportunity to reproduce. Another scripture, we won't turn there, but in Deuteronomy 22:6, it talks about if someone was to come up to a nesting bird, they could take the eggs, but they were to allow leave the female bird alone while it is nesting so the species could reproduce. Fortunately, that wasn't the case with the passenger pigeon. They were all slaughtered. But the time is going to come when God's way of life will be applied to the environment, and that is what we need to be learning today, to apply God's way of life in the environment and, of course, in all areas. And perhaps when we do that, then the passenger pigeon will make a return. If you turn to, I'd like to conclude by turning to Ezekiel 36. Ezekiel 36, verse 11. Ezekiel 36, 11, God says, talking about the world tomorrow, says, "And I will multiply upon you man and beast." Now, of course, this is just my speculation, but perhaps one of the beasts that we will have multiplied upon us again will be the passenger pigeon. And if that's the case, they will be able at that time rejoice with all of the creation when God's way of life is applied and this creation becomes the paradise and remains the paradise that God intended it to be.